to a brand new episode of Look Forward. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Brad.
I mean, give the people what they want, Jay.
All right, another bright story to start us off. Henry Kissinger, at the ripe old age of 100, has died. Look, Henry Kissinger dying is not, heaven has not lost an angel.
or gained an angel, as it were.
They certainly did not gain one, if you believe in that. I don't. Look, if there is a hell, Henry Kissinger deserves to be there. One of the all-time worst people in politics, not just in American politics, all of politics, anywhere on the planet since forever. Okay.
One could say one of the absolute worst and most death causing folks in post World War II civilization.
Easily. Look, he was a foreign policy advisor, and was the go to guy for many Republican presidents who were just like, "Hey, are there brown people we can kill over there?" And he was like, "Let's call Henry, see what he says." And he would basically advise some of the worst fucking positions in American history, foreign policy-wise. Look, it's the story that I linked to is a pretty good one. It kind of gives you a good overview of just the type of dirtbag Kissinger was. Just quickly, this is five of Henry Kissinger's worst war crimes. Doesn't mean it's all of them. Just the worst ones, right? Number one, which is the most obvious, if you know anything about history, the carpet bombing of Cambodia. Look, under Nixon, basically, he was just like, hey, at the height of the Vietnam War, hey, there's a Cambodian civil war. Why don't we really help with that by bombing the shit out of Cambodia, right? Causing unbelievable death. In total, the United States dropped 540,000 tons of bombs over Cambodia, killing around 150,000 civilians.
You know, it's a good thing that we don't have any, you know, current modern day corollaries that we can compare to, you know, the indiscriminate bombing of an opposition force and catching a whole bunch of civilians in the wake.
Yeah.
Thank God that doesn't happen anymore, guys.
Yeah. Don't even think about it. Just don't even think about it. That's what they'd like you to do, not even think about it. And actually now that you brought that up, obviously that's in reference to what's happening in the Gaza Strip. I want to pull that clip. I'll try to do it while we're talking of that conversation.
Oh, Mark Lamont Hill talking to Dave Freeman.
Yeah, Mark Lamont. Yeah, that was unreal. And this is a prime example of the unbelievable, insane rhetoric coming to the defense of Israel. Again, not that Israel doesn't have a legitimate argument about like bombing and killing its citizens, just their response is absolutely abhorrent. And that is the big argument, right? But we'll talk about that later. It's fucking fascinating. Number two, engineering a fascist coup in Chile. Of course, look, when like the CIA gets involved in all of this shit, at the behest of people like Henry Kissinger, like countries get overthrown, military occupation happens, things like that. Chile was a very special case. Of course, a very famous military general ended up taking over Chile, Pinochet.
And staying for quite some time.
Quite some time, and killing lots of Chileans, like a lot. Anybody who opposed him, sort of, you know, even the ideas of like what we refer to as like disappearing and things like that, like he was infamous for doing that, like unbelievable amounts of sort of intra-aggression of Chileans, and we helped back that shit, like we did, right? The U.S. absolutely did. So yeah, Brad, sure. I go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, you know, a lot's been made of the U.S. you know, sticking their hand into the U.S. overthrowing leftist Latin regimes in Central and South America in the 70s and 80s. And that was all thanks to Henry Kissinger, who started that whole fucking trend that continued right up through the Reagan administration. So thanks, Hank.
I mean, you know, certainly working to topple South American countries went even further than Reagan. I mean, you can look at just a number of years ago in like, Colombia, you know, things like that, right? So we're also responsible for that shit, or at least trying to meddle in those things. Look, here I teed up to you personally. I have a Pinochet story, an interesting Pinochet story.
Oh yes, that's right. You did.
Yes. So no, I did not know the man personally, but my wife and I went to Chile a number of years ago, like on vacation. Mm-hmm. A beautiful country, by the way, really interesting place. And we went to the Andes, right? Mm-hmm. Like on, you know, like one of these like day trips or whatever. They get you up early as fuck in the morning and they're like, all right, get all your fucking winter gear and let's go. We go. It was like miserably cold. But then we actually got to the Andes and it was warm. It was weird. It was like 70 degrees. But we're on the bus trip going to the Andes and this woman who is like a tour guide or whatever is telling us like, these are, you know, like sort of the history of Chile and like, oh, and this, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, has anybody ever heard of Pinochet? And I'm like, sadly, yes. And a number of other people are like, yeah, of course. She's like, these are some of the unmarked graves that were found, like, of Chilean civilians. Like, as we're driving, she was like, and the like they were like marked and shit, like now, of just like thousands of people. They just killed them, threw them off the road. Like, it was just insane, what? Right?
Did she just mention that, like, matter-of-factly?
Yeah, they were like, this is where they found unmarked graves of just, like, tons of Chileans that Pinochet had killed. Like, yeah, this is part of it. She was like, yeah, people are, like, not too pleased with the history of Pinochet. It's like, yeah, no shit. Like, it was just...
understatement of the century.
Right, it was just, like, one of these weird moments where it was just like, there's a bunch of unmarked graves. Like, they were there. They found them since then, and it was all really terrible. It was like... Yeah, that's pretty terrible. But good skiing just a couple of minutes away. It's like, cool, great. But yeah, it was pretty fucking horrendous. But yeah, like the shit in Chile was pretty terrible. We also supported Argentina's dirty war under him. I'm not actually familiar with that one. Backing Indonesia's invasion of East Timor or Timor. Supporting Pakistan's genocide in Bangladesh, another fucking rather famous one. So, look, it's – I'm not going to say that you should, you know, celebrate the death of people. But what I will say is you should definitely celebrate the death of Henry Kissinger specifically. This is fine. No one will feel bad for you. You won't feel bad. Trust me. And if you don't know who Henry Kissinger is and you're like, man, I don't know. Like, I feel slightly bad about, like, laughing about this. Just read the article that I linked in the docket. You'll be fine. You'll feel absolved of all of your sins. It's cool.
And again, like, you know, like when you know how it is. Like, when you anticipate something happening and you wait a really long time for it, Like just the build up to that and the catharsis when you finally get that release is immense. And we've been waiting for Henry Kissinger to die for at least the last 20 years.
20?
I'm just saying where it was like reasonable that's like, man, he should probably be dying pretty soon because he's pretty old. Like we've had to wait a really long time.
I'm thinking like 70 years, like surely God, the great smoter, will should have smoted him many years ago. Obviously in the last 20 years it's like, how is this guy, when every time they wheeled him out, oh, I'm still alive, like, fuck, really, why? But no, look, this is a good thing as far as I'm concerned. He's one of the worst people to ever be at the levers of power, like quite literally. And again, you can just hate him for the carpet bombing of Cambodia alone, and that would be enough if he wasn't sufficiently a piece of shit in so many other ways. Killing 150,000 civilians is crazy.
Yeah, don't limit yourself to just one act of attempted genocide. Like, there's so many more to choose from when it comes to Henry Kissinger. So
yeah, look, there's so many. Everybody can pick their own, and do your own book report. So yeah, it's pretty unbelievable that he's been around this long, but he ain't anymore. So that's
not anymore. He can hang out with Rush Limbaugh, who is also dead and has been for a while.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Hey, guys, you remember that time Henry Kissinger and Rush Limbaugh died? It was awesome. All right, next up. Second best story of the week, easily. I'll let you run with this one.
Yeah, so the House has expelled arguably the messiest bitch to ever sit in the halls of Congress. Of course, we are talking about New York Congressperson George Santos, who, in the wake of the House Ethics Committee sending down the results of their investigation and incoming, what is it, 23-count federal indictment that's around the corner for him. Democrats finally joined many of their Republican colleagues to overwhelmingly vote George Santos out of Congress, where he couldn't even bother to stay like for the final tally of the vote. Like basically once it got over the 2/3 mark, he was out of the building.
He's like, you know what? I don't need to be here for the final say.
Yeah, which you know, I get that. There's no reason to do that. Obviously, Republicans as a whole didn't want to have to do this because their majority in the House is currently very slim as it is,
right.
And losing another vote especially because his seat is very likely to be replaced by a Democrat in a special election is very bad for them. But at the same time, like leaving this guy in Congress and embarrassing the rest of these New York Republicans that are in plus mm-hmm. Biden districts is also pretty like it's gambling the other way. At least now those voters or those congresspeople can go back to their voters and say, hey, like we got rid of this corrupt asshole. You know, even though he's part of our party, let's get the fuck out of here. Fun fact, in case those were wondering, George Santos, only the sixth person to ever be expelled from the House of Representatives. The first one in about 20 years for that to happen. And I think the first one to be, what was I going to say? Oh, the first one since like the Civil War, basically, to be expelled without,
yeah, I believe so.
Without being convicted of a crime, which is interesting.
Look, it, again, no, you know, like this is fine. This is another thing that is absolutely fine. This is long overdue. Look, he should have been expelled after he was sworn in, and it turns out like that dude lied about being Jewish and said he was Jewish. That should have been it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, come on, dude, that's insane. Yeah. Like if you're a Republican, you should be like, that's really offensive to try to use that as a way to like get people to support you. You're a dirtbag. Like that should have been a rat right then. But of course, he had to continue lying. Now, here's the funny thing. City and State NY.com, which obviously has a very vested interest in George Santos. I never heard of this website, but God bless him for this article. George Santos lies ranked, because who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love that?
Oh, my God.
So number 17 isn't that big of a deal. It's a city and state power list.
There's 17 that they ranked. Wow, I mean, you just go top 10. I feel like
they're going big. They're going big. One of the first lessons taught to journalists is to report the news, not be the news. He apparently he said that he was like ranked on this website, and they're like, that's why they got offended. Like, you're not even ranked on our website. Like, top New Yorkers. Like, he just lied about it. No, that was number 17. Number 16. So here we start getting into the good ones. Number 16. He said he was not a drag queen. Obviously, we know that is false. Mm-hmm. By the way, today he came out and said that he is against marriage equality, even though he's married to a man. Yes.
That was he's homosexual.
Yeah. Yeah, quite open.
Okay.
Yeah, like.
Okay.
All right. Sure, bro. You plan on getting a divorce? Like, what's happening? Like, we need to get rid of this law. Like, today. So yeah, was not a drag queen. Obviously, he was. He even had a different name and everything else. Like, it's just ridiculous.
What are the top five? That's what I want to know. What are the top five Santos lies?
I am going. You got to give me 15 though. You got to let me do number 15.
Okay.
Because this one, Micah, as you're listening, this one is for you. He said that he was one of the producers on Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark Broadway play. Turns out he was not. Which is hilarious. Number 14, he said he was a volleyball star at Baruch College. He was not. He did not even attend Baruch College, claiming that he was there on a volleyball scholarship. No, he was not. He said he was a Baruch College and NYU grad. Neither school agrees that he ever attended those places. He said he worked on Wall Street. I believe he said he worked at Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. Both of those companies are like, he's never worked for us. He even said under oath, by the way, to a judge that, in fact, he used to work for Goldman Sachs. So perjury. Cool. They should go after him for that, by the way. That would be fun. He, of course, said ancestors were Jewish refugees of the Holocaust. You know, when he said, quote, he was Jewish, which is a real scumbag thing to do. He said he had employees who died at the Pulse nightclub shooting. He did not, which is a real, again, scumbag thing to do.
Real scumbag move.
Is it, Brad? Because number 8 is somehow even scummier. He said his mother died on 9/11 at the World Trade Center. Later, when he was called out about that, like, dude, your mom died in 2016. He goes, no. My mom was exposed to, like, chemicals at her office on 9/11. Then she later died in 2016 from cancer. And then, of course, people did further digging. It turns out, due to, like, immigration information, his mom not only was not in New York, she wasn't even in the United States during 9/11. Why'd you make it up? What do you think?
And that's number 8. That's number 8.
That's number 8. he lied about his 7-year marriage. Santos, who's been out gay for at least a decade, was legally married to a woman from 2012 to 2019, and what has the hallmarks of a scheme to get her U.S. citizenship. A man who dated him in 2013 said Santos promised him a green card if he married him. Santos also planned an engagement party with another man in 2014, but the party and the engagement never happened. Number 6, this is a doozy, committing check fraud in Brazil. That became a big thing. Number 5, says he is a multimillionaire. He told the House that he took $750,000 salary in 2021 and 2022, earned between $2 and $10 million in dividends from his company, had more than $1 million in a savings account, and a place in Brazil worth at least $500,000. Those in the capital introduction business said there's no way that's true. So, cool. he says he's, quote, a friend of pets. For someone who claimed to run a charity called Friend of Pets United, Santos did a lot of dogs dirty. Though Friends of Pets United had a social media presence, he lied about being involved in that. He, of course, was a part of the big lie. So that's number 3. He did fake donations to his campaign. You could also add that he went and bought Ferragamo clothing and, like, all that shit and spent, like, what is it, $6,000 on OnlyFans and then lied and said he just learned about what OnlyFans was like a month ago. All right. Which he was even called out on Fox News about that. So that's number 2. And then number 1, Santos staffer pretends to be a staffer for Speaker Kevin McCarthy. A staffer for Santos claimed over phone calls and emails with potential donors to be Dan Meyer, chief of staff to now House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, or then House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. The apparent aim was to pull in more donations by giving him a sense of legitimacy. Instead, it got Santos a formal complaint from the FEC. While other Republicans have disavowed Santos, McCarthy has treated him pretty normally. So, yeah.
It's just, like I said, we see, you know, people who lie constantly in public, but, like, to see someone who just, like, lies so effortlessly, like, this is, like, Trumpian levels.
Yeah,
he outdoes Trump.
Yeah, he is a weird pathological liar, man. Like, he's got a real fucking problem. So is he threatening to try to run again? Is that the deal?
Well, so I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Like, that seems like that'd be a really bad idea. But what else is funny is that he is threatening to basically go on a revenge tour and use the House Ethics Committee to go after some of those other New York Republicans who were instrumental in voting him out. He made 3 posts on Twitter saying that he'll be filing an ethics complaint against Nicole Malatakis regarding her questionable stock trading since joining the Ways and Means Committee. He's going to go after Mike Lawler for questionable campaign finance violations. And then he's going to go after Nick LaLotta, saying that he basically attended law school while he was working at the Board of Elections. So we might not have heard the last of George Santos as he tries to get revenge for those who have wronged him, like a real weird congressional Charles Bronson.
That's fine. Look, I love it. What's the dude's name? Tad Cadworth or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, remember he was trying to take down Republicans as well. After he got his ass booted, obviously just voted out. But, like, it's interesting because Santos said very similar things that that he said. Like, these people are out, mm-hmm. you know, sleeping around. They're, like, partying. They're doing drugs. He said all the same stuff. It's almost as if those guys were not lying about that. And then once freed from, you know, the shackles of being on that team, they were just like, I'm fucking saying everything. Yeah.
Yeah. The Republican Party is there. I'm going to air all the dirty laundry, spill all the tea.
Yeah. So. Look, dude, spill it. Do it. You fucking coward. So yeah, look, bye-bye. Sad news, I guess. incidentally, Matt Gaetz frets about the House GOP's precarious majority now that George Santos is out.
Of course. Of course. Well, Gaetz did not vote to boot him. There was about 114 Republicans that voted, 112 Republicans voted to keep him in, and Democrats voted present. I don't know who the two Democrats were. But yeah, there were, like, especially the MAGA loonies were trying to hang on to him as much as they possibly could, because they know that it's going to make it that much harder to negotiate when they have a 3-vote majority now, I think.
Something like that.
As things stand currently. Yeah.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is ironic, right? Because he called the expulsion of Santos, quote, tactically stupid. Yeah, that's interesting. Like,
wow, that's just, I mean, shoot comments that aren't meant to be shoot comments right there. So,
I mean, like, bro, what did you do a couple of weeks ago? Like, what are you responsible for? Like, do you think we forgot? Like, you threw Congress or the House into chaos for 3 weeks.
Yeah, like, just to get your guy installed with the same, you know, narrow majorities that you had before, basically. Good job.
And doing the same thing Kevin McCarthy was doing. Doing the same thing. Like, so it's like, for you to be, like, tactically stupid, relax.
It's by the way, it's crazy to me, like, George Santos hasn't even been in Congress for a year. And that boggles my mind. Like, we had so much Santos over the last 15 months between, you know, the last couple months of the election and then, you know, once he got in and started acting a fool. Like, I'm just like, I feel like he's been there forever. But, like, no, literally, literally a decade? 10 or 11 months. 11 months, basically.
I love it. Good. Kick him out. That's great. Fun. Good fun had by all. Well, by us. All right. This is also, you put this one up. This Trump story is fucking wild. Go for it.
Yeah, I did. So Donald Trump, is basically doing the equivalent of just throwing shit at the wall and hoping something sticks in his various legal defenses that he's trying to mount against, you know, 91 federal indictments and a civil charge. Mm-hmm. So he basically appealed to both Judge Chutkan in D.C. for the January 6th case and to civil lawyers basically trying to say that because he was the president, former president, not current president, before president, that he's immune from prosecution in the United States of America.
That's really not how that works, bro. Like, that just means that if that were true,
mm-hmm.
you could then become president, leave the presidency, and just commit crimes all you want. Like, they're like, just shooting people, just do whatever you want. What kind of
the argument that he's making is that because he was the president when the alleged crimes were committed, that he has immunity from prosecution because you know, whatever his nonsense here is. Yeah, basically, Judge Shutkin, in knocking this down, said the office of the president, quote, does not confer a lifelong get out of jail free pass.
No, like, and the fact that they even think it does. And they look, by the way, I know they don't actually believe that. They're scrounging to find an answer. No, that doesn't work. And look, they should have knocked it down. They should have knocked it down. It's ridiculous. It's just an utterly ridiculous thing to say. He's woefully unprepared for what is coming for him. And they don't know what to do. His lawyers are completely feckless because, in fairness to them, they've got a client that their case is so obviously fucked for them. They don't know what to do. They're just like, I don't know, man. Like, I guess he's immune. Can we try that? No? Fuck. All right. Like, go back to the big guy and be like, nah, that shit didn't work either, dude. Like, they don't have anything. They just simply don't have anything. And I don't know why you would even want to take that job, like, as a lawyer. I just do not understand why you want to. Besides money. So, good? Good. Good. all right, let's take a quick break and come right back. All right, let's talk about the debate between...
Oh, my God.
Ron DeSantis and an adult. look, I'm not sure there was a better example of Republican policies, or it's not even really Republican policies, but I guess you could say Republican social policies are a bunch of mean-spirited bullshit. And Democrats get things done, like real things done. It was an embarrassing debate, the clips that I've seen of it. I didn't really hear much from DeSantis that I thought was particularly convincing. If you like Ron DeSantis, I guess you like Ron DeSantis. But I found nothing that he said to be particularly convincing of anything.
Well, here's the other thing, too, that I have to bring up. So this debate was held on the Sean Hannity White Power Hour on Fox News.
Correct.
And Sean Hannity was the quote-unquote moderator for this debate. And he even took great pains to say, hey, like, I'm just going to be the moderator here. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just calling balls and strikes. Like, I'm just reading the questions. Like, this will be fine. And then basically proceeded to hurl softballs at DeSantis and frame questions in the most unfair light possible when asking Gavin Newsom questions. And he also ran cover for DeSantis when Newsom had him on the ropes, like Hannity would try to move the debate along. So he was not a neutral arbiter in this process whatsoever. So Gavin Newsom went on to Fox News against a Republican darling with a basically a crooked umpire and still came out, as I said, looking like the 2028 presidential frontrunner, basically, coming out of this debate.
I don't even think it's a fucking debate. Like, look, before we get into the shit that was said, Kamala Harris, step aside. Step aside. Like, this is over, baby. Like, it's over. Like, this guy has cemented himself as a frontrunner. Whether he ends up winning the nomination, who knows? Get the fuck out of here, dude. He looked perfect in this debate. He had the exact right temperament, which is, I know what the fuck I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I know you guys are full of shit. I'm not going to be mealy-mouthed about it. I'm going to have just enough acerbic behavior to go, that's kind of a dick. But if you agree with him, you're like, yeah, but I mean, this guy's making a lot of sense. Like, that's what people want. They want a fighter, but they don't want somebody who's just going to be like a bully, but they want a fighter. And Newsom is a fighter.
Let me tell you this. Newsom KO'd DeSantis in his opening remarks because he basically ended his opening statement by saying to DeSantis, the only thing you and I have in common is neither of us are going to be the nominee for our party in the 2024 presidential election. Like, that is devastating. And it's why, as a presidential candidate, you don't run against a guy who's not currently a presidential candidate, or you don't debate a guy who's not currently a presidential candidate. Like, that's so stupid. Why would you do this, Ron DeSantis?
Yeah, and it was funny because Newsom had comment, like, he was like, listen, when you took the debate, you took the bait. I got you to debate me, proving that you're not even interested in this actual run for president because you've already lost. I mean, Newsom had that line. He goes, you're trying to be Trump. You're trying to out-Trump Trump from the right. He goes, and how's that working out for you? You're 40 points behind. It's like, geez.
In your own state. In your own state, he said. And he literally said, like, when are you going to get out of the way and give Nikki Haley a real shot to take on Trump? Like basically saying what everyone fucking knows. And again, like, the 2024 comment was his closing statement, not his opening statement. But he was just landing fucking haymakers left and right. Like, basically, they wanted to talk about COVID because DeSantis is like, oh, like, he was this fucking hardliner and he was like the best governor on COVID or whatever. Meanwhile, like, people were dying in his state left and right, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. And Newsom basically called him out and was like, look, he's like, you followed Fauci up until it became politically inconvenient to do so. And then all of a sudden you reversed course. He's like, you guys closed down before California did. He's like, because you were following the science. He's like, and then you reverse course and you cause like fucking thousands of people in your state to fucking die because of what you did, you dumb fuck. And you did it for politics. Like literally that's what he said. He crushed him on fucking on immigration. He called out DeSantis for the stunts that he was running of, you know, going into Texas, busing people up to Martha's Vineyard, and then busing people all around. And he humanized it in a really smart way. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, this is bad politics. He's like, I don't like the way you treat immigrants. Like, I don't like the way you treat people that are a lower stature than you. He's like, you're a bully.
Look, here's the thing. And this, you know, it was funny. Like, a little behind the scenes, right? Like in the network that we have a podcast, right? I was talking to one of our other hosts, Micah, and he was saying that he was listening to an interview with Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks, who is running for president. Okay. It's all about me. It's all about me. Yeah, right. Knock it off. He was interviewing, he was being interviewed on The Breakfast Club, right? Which is a useless place to be interviewed, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I know, that's how you get to the black community. Yeah, black people do more than just listen to rap music. Like, relax. And those guys are terrible interviews, but whatever. So he was on there, and Michael was like, this guy really, like, there's something about him that's rubbing me the wrong way. And I told him, I said, listen, you have to remember, even though Cenk is not a Republican, he grew up as a Republican. He was a mm-hmm. Republican for a very, very long time, and then became a leftist, right? And the reason why I bring that up is because Cenk's entire view of politics is he mm-hmm. has very liberal policies, which is perfectly fine, and I probably agree with 95% of them, right? Or maybe even higher than that. But his tactics I don't agree with. And his tactic is to be a bully. And his tactic is mm-hmm. to just be as brutal as you can be in politics to win. Now, what he would say is, that's how you win. That's why Republicans beat Democrats and stuff like that. But the thing is, and it's the same thing with DeSantis, and Gavin points it out, Democrats don't want bullies. Look, yeah. Democrats would rather lose than to become Republicans, dude. They would. Now, you could say that's a terrible fucking long-term plan or whatever, but I would make the argument that you can win without being a bully, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what probably Cenk and I would probably agree with is Democrats have to be a little more forceful and like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try to push our policy and stuff like that. I would probably tend to agree with him. But the bully tactics, they don't work. They actually turn Democratic voters off. But when you are steeped in thinking that that's how politics works from Republicanism, and then you adopt the policies of the left, you still think the tactics of the right are what works universally. They do not. Mm-hmm. That's why he lost in California. That's why he will lose as a presidential nominee. Also, he has no chance. Like, you will never win with Democrats overall because you think that way. This is a fundamental, right? It's just a fundamental. It's not your policies. The policies, Democrats largely agree with you, right? So Gavin pointing out, and I bring this back to Newsom's point, that's the MO if you want to fight the Republicans on the national stage. Point out that they're bullies, right? They are bullying immigrants. Mm-hmm. They are bullying women. They are bullying minorities. People don't like bullies. On like leftists, true leftists who didn't grow up and turn to being liberals or whatever, but they were like their families are liberal. They have been liberal. That is who they are. It is a part of what is imprinted on them. They don't like bullies, right? Mm-hmm. That's a thing that is a resonating fucking thing. You could say, oh, it's probably because they're a bunch of fucking little like nerds or whatever. Maybe. It might be as simple as that. But Democrats don't like bullies. And if you can point out that Republicans are bullies, and they are, that will resonate with people. And there's a reason they use that word. Because it's an easy thing for everyone to understand. Everyone can just visualize the kid from A Christmas Story beating up Ralphie and his little brother, right? When they're like running home from school. You can visualize what a bully is versus something else. It was some, you know, archaic political term. You don't need to use that. People understand it's like you're the little guy, you're the big guy, and you have more power, and you're kicking the shit out of this guy for no reason. That is exactly the way you should frame it. So, no, bully tactics do not work coming from the left. They don't work.
So the other thing that I think DeSantis and Hannity wanted to accomplish is they wanted to basically have Newsom be a stand-in for Joe Biden in this debate, and basically have DeSantis or have Newsom kind of answer for the Biden administration, which then they just kept hammering on California, which, you know, if you want him to, you know, hammer on Biden, then fucking talk about national shit, but okay. But a cool moment there is so Sean Hannity literally asked the question to Gavin Newsom. It sure seems like Joe Biden doesn't have all his mental faculties. Does Joe Biden have all his mental faculties?
Solid question.
Which is a ridiculous question in a quote unquote debate.
When did you stop beating your wife?
And I really like Newsom's answer because not only did he not ascribe to like this Hannity, you know, that question that Hannity asked, but he also went and he's like, hey, like I'd rather take Joe Biden at 100 over Ron DeSantis or any Republican, because it's not about like, oh, he tripped over this word or whatever here or there, but it's about what you do. It's about like what you accomplish while you're there. And then he proceeded to like list off all the accomplishments of the Biden administration and then turned it around on DeSantis and was like, here's all the shit that you've gotten done while you're in Florida. Like you put in like a restrictive abortion ban and you're fucking, you know, banning 1400 books from Florida schools and shit like that. He's like, you're not doing anything for your citizens. He's like, you're just in culture wars all day long.
I mean, facts, bro.
Where's the lie?
Like, dude, right. DeSantis has done nothing but culture war bullshit because that is what gives Republicans red meat. That's it.
Yep.
Not actual policies to help anyone, right? Well, you could say those policies help people who are bigoted against gay folks or they're like, but not like overall, hey, man, we're building roads. Like, hey, man, we're doing big infrastructure projects, except for the ones that
that was the other thing that he hit DeSantis with as well. He's like, you sit here and complain about Bidenomics. He's like, last week, he's like, you were celebrating Bidenomics. He's like, you got $28 million from the Chips and Science Act in your state. He's like, and you were out here trumpeting that. He's like, so, you know, he's like, you love it, too. So my favorite moment of the debate, and I guess you should bring some stuff that you want to make sure you get out there at a debate, but you shouldn't be so steadfast to that you don't respond in real time to things. And this is a good example of why. So I think as part of an extrapolating conversation about gun violence, Newsom brought up the fact that Florida has the third worst mental health system in the country behind Mississippi and Texas. And DeSantis's response to this was he held up a map that was like had like a heat map, but it's been like all brown and yellows and stuff like that. And he's like, this is a map of the greatest like concentration in San Francisco where you can find like feces on the ground. That was his retort to like, hey, like your state's mental health system is a fucking joke. He's like, but poop.
People are pooping on the ground. Look, man, that's a real fucking problem. I'm not going to lie. It's fucking gross. Not a very good response, though. Not a very good response. It makes you seem childish and ridiculous.
Yes.
I'm sure they were like high-fiving each other when they came up with that idea. It's not a good one. Like, okay. Yeah. And how many mass shootings and all this other shit's going on?
Right, yeah, it's like, yeah, like we've loosened these gun laws, and I mean, DeSantis called him out on his response to Parkland specifically, like Newsom, in the face.
Newsom called DeSantis out.
Yeah, sorry, and again, like DeSantis' response is, "That's doo doo, baby." Like, I don't have anything to tell you. Sorry.
That's all I got. That's all I got.
Like, yeah.
We workshopped this for 3 weeks.
Right.
This is the best response we have. And look.
Like, look, they pick the colors and everything. Like, it's super brown here because that's where you have the most poop.
Yeah. Hey, look. It's right by the fish market. You don't like that? Look, it's, again, it's a disgusting situation to be have happen. But again, not a very good response in a debate. Like, no. You look silly. I am one of these people. I'm a lame person, I guess. Like, I don't like to see those videos of like people doing a bunch of like flash mob robbings in stores in California and shit like that. I think they need to do something about it. I think it's ridiculous that they're like, mm-hmm. Well, as long as it's like $2,500 worth of stuff, it's fine. No, yo, you can't just have people just breaking the wall. Like, it's just crazy to me. Like, it's nuts. And I know when people are like, well, it's only merchandise in his back. No, dude. There's a level of lawlessness that's not a good idea. You just don't do that.
Yeah.
Does that mean cops come in and shoot people? No, obviously. Yeah.
I think it's usually a pretty good, like if you have a one-on-one debate, it's usually a pretty good sign the person who's losing is the one who's typically trying to talk over the other person 100%. As much as possible.
100%.
And like every clip that I saw was like DeSantis trying to talk over Newsom, like when Newsom spouted a fact that he didn't like, instead of just like, you know, piling that stuff up and unleashing it like in his rebuttal, because Hannity would have given DeSantis as much time as he fucking wanted to.
Yep.
Jesus Christ, Hannity was so in the tank for DeSantis, by the way, that like he and his producers had like fucking graphics whipped up for DeSantis like talking points that they were able to like show on the screen when DeSantis brought up something like it's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we have a graph for that we can show the viewers. So, like, that's,
we just so happen to have that. We just have that.
Yeah, good job. Good job, guys. So yeah, so again, really, really dumb, unforced error by Ron DeSantis even doing this. Yeah. And look, Gavin Newsom went into the Lion's Den and he came out smelling like $1 million. I'm not typically one for giving help to boost like the fucking ratings of like Hannity and Laura Ingraham and shit like that. Right. But basically Newsom is doing what Pete Buttigieg did in 2020. Like he's going on the hostile airways to deliver. And again, Newsom even said this himself, I'm going to talk to your viewers and let them hear things that they've never heard on this network before, because you guys don't talk about it.
I mean, where is the lie?
Right.
So I do want to play, just before we get out of here, I do want to actually play for people so they can actually see what Newsom was saying in that sort of closing. I think it's his closing argument. So here you go.
I'm here. I'm here to tell the truth about the Biden-Harris record and also compare and contrast Ron DeSantis's record and the Republican Party's record as a point of contrast that's as different as daylight and darkness. You want to bring us back to a pre-1960s world, America in reverse. You want to roll back hard-earned national rights on voting rights, on civil rights, on LGBTQ rights, on women's rights, not just access to abortion, but also access to contraception. You want to weaponize grievance. You are focusing on false separateness. You in particular, Ron, are on a banning binge, a cultural purge, intimidating and humiliating people you disagree with. You and President Trump are really trying to light democracy on fire. So, Sean, there are profound differences tonight, and I look forward to engaging them. But there's one thing in closing that we have in common is neither.
Neither of us are going to be.
Neither of us are going to be the nominee.
Yeah, that was his opening statement.
So many awkward DeSantis smiles too, man. That guy is just like not a normal person.
No, he's clearly a roach monster wearing a human skin suit. First there was Ted Cruz, now there's Ron DeSantis. They're really bad at like at the whole human thing over there on the right. They're bad at it, dude. It's not a lot of them who are pretty good at just like being a normal fucking person. So yeah, that was certainly something. Certainly was. All right, let's take another quick break, and we're gonna then talk about the Florida GOP chair.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Florida GOP chair and husband of Moms of Liberty president accused of rape. Of course.
Of course. Who could have possibly seen this coming?
Yeah, who could see it? Look, I'm shocked. I'm definitely, definitely shocked by all of this. Look, the Moms of Liberty are a scumbag organization of women? Not really. Who are just trying to weaponize this, like, this idea of a concerned mom against, you know, the horrible gay liberal agenda or drag queen agenda or whatever non-conformist 1950s housewife nonsense is going on in the world, you know, progress. And so they're trying to foment this idea of like, join us and we're going to keep it pure and how it was where all ladies wore dresses and had a steak in the pan for their husbands when they got home, right? Like, that's literally, it's like the wives on Mad Men who didn't want to just like murder Don Draper.
Well, so, and not only that, but like the organization is, it's kind of akin to the Federalist Society where they're basically recruiting right-wing moms to and basically training them and you one could say grooming them to learn how to run for like school boards and win these elections to get onto these local school boards where then they, you know, once they have the majority of folks there, they can just do whatever the fuck they want, essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I like cool, another garbage organization creating more garbage people. Like, can't wait. Please add more D-bags to the fire. Thank you.
Yes.
Look, so yeah, this guy busted for rape and sexual assault. Of course.
Well, is being investigated. They've not arrested him yet.
Yeah. Look, I'm not shocked. Thou protest too much. Like every one of these guys gets busted for dirty fucking behaviors because they are trying to, you know, use their morality to as a cudgel to beat people over the head. It's like, these drag queens are ruining kids. Meanwhile, you're trying to fuck kids. Like, and it's just like over and over and over again. And I don't understand how the general public that are not, you know, terminally involved in this shit like we are, like, I don't understand how those folks don't see this and be like, another one? Like, it's really weird. Yeah, dude. Stop listening to these people. They're always scum.
Well, like I said, it's easy when you can just like turn a blind eye to anything that inconveniences your narrative or your preconceived thoughts. So
yeah, no kidding. Look, I when I saw this story, I was like, that's not a surprise at all. Like,
no, like it did not even faze me at all. So
yeah. Like, I'm so cool. I'm surprised but it took this long.
but I cannot wait because a lot of those, especially the board that Ziegler is on, the Moms for Liberty board in Sarasota, like a lot of those board meetings, end up going viral on like TikTok and shit like that. So I absolutely cannot wait for Sarasotans to just basically throw this shit in her face incessantly and constantly during these board meetings.
Oh,
it's gonna be fucking amazing.
Oh, she's gonna quit. Nobody wants to hear, hey, isn't your spouse a fucking rapist, like over and overnight? Like,
well, not only that, but reportedly she and her husband, the person accusing Christian Ziegler of rape, she and her husband were in a throuple situation with this woman.
Yeah.
And Do as I say, not as I do.
And do her, yeah, and her and her and her. Like, dude.
Yes.
It's just hilarious. And look, there's nothing wrong. If you want to be in a threesome, you sure want to have you want to get your rocks off. No problem, man. Look, I got zero issues with that. I may or may not have seen videos like that on the internet. It's fine. It's fine. My issue is stop judging others about their lives when you are doing something that you know is outside of whatever the, you know, the standard is,
right? Or just stop administering yourself as like the moral authority, essentially, in these situations, which they are doing when you in fact behave in a way that some cohort of yours might find immoral, actually. Not us though, because we are the tolerant left. So
yeah, I look, I 100% support your life choice to do this, and you should, in fact, not put it online because I think you're both gross. But it's fine. It's fine. I'll watch something else and think of not you. So yeah, it's just weird because, of course, like, oh, and they were in a throuple with this person. Of course they were. Of course they were. Yeah. Why wouldn't they be? It couldn't just be like a random woman. You also are like having an extramarital affair too. Of course.
Yeah.
Like,
real echo of the whole Jerry Falwell Jr. Situation.
Yeah. You don't hear too much from him. Yeah, remember that time I tell you I watched the documentary about the guy who they were like hired to like the cuckold
the
or the cuck
the pool boy? Yeah.
Yeah. He was the cuckler versus Jerry Falwell Jr. being the cucky or just the cuck. Or maybe the wife is the cucky.
Good. I don't. Cuck, yeah.
That was a wild documentary, dude. Like, it was a wild. I watched half of it. I was like, I feel almost uncomfortable knowing the level of information that's being told about this. It was wild. But I can't turn away. It was crazy. Brad, next up. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum suspends his campaign for president.
I just want to point out that in the docket, when I wrote the description of the headline, I said North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, quote unquote, suspends his quote unquote campaign for president.
Yeah, I'm confused because I was confused by the fact that who the fuck is Doug Burgum?
Well, Doug Burgum has been on stage so far for all of the Republican primary presidential debates. I don't know if you know that because he had about the effectiveness in those debates of an umbrella stand, standing over on one of the extreme edges of the stage, and nobody remembered anything about him. But he was in fact running for president.
Yeah.
And now he is no longer running for president.
Look, I got to tell you, this is the best quote I saw about this in response to this was on Reddit. Quote, "This is a real shock. I didn't even know who this guy was."
and I will say, though I was aware that Doug Burgum was running for president in the Republican primary, this picture that we have in the link story of Doug Burgum is literally the first time that I've ever seen Doug Burgum.
Someone said Eugene Levy is probably pissed that SNL is not going to call him.
Like, you know, it was a long shot, but I think Eugene Levy would have been the guy if Doug Burgum had made it somewhere in this election.
Doug Burgum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just what a joke.
I also love that he defaulted to the normal, like, also ran candidate excuse when he drops out. He's like, you know, it's actually not fair that they have these like donor and fucking poll thresholds that to get on debate stage, actually. Like, the people should just decide. I'm like, bro, the people have been deciding. Like, they do look at poll numbers, and no one knows who you are or cares. So what the fuck do you mean, let the people decide? They did.
They absolutely do not give a fuck who you are. Right. Like, so, yeah, it's, dude, just give it to that fucking dickbag. Like, for the love of God, let's just be done with this. This is just
or just like I said, Newsom's right. Like, fucking everyone else on that stage should fucking yeet out of there and let Nikki Haley have a real go at it. Because again, she has shown that she's probably the only one who stands even a chance She
does. She, look, man, again, I am not a fan of Nikki Haley as a politician, but I will give her absolute credit. She's looking pretty goddamn good in these debates.
Yeah.
She is. She's looking pretty good in these debates. But, you know, again, these guys don't learn lessons. They don't learn lessons.
So and again, someone like her would into... like one of the biggest problems they have is that they have a lot of these like moderate Republicans who bail in the party basically and will not are never Trump. She would absolutely bring those people back into the fold. Like all these like fucking she never would. Trumpers out there, she like would. Bill Kristol and Tom Nichols and all these people that fucking, you know, Steve Schmidt and all these guys, like they would absolutely fall right back in line if you had a Nikki Haley.
Yeah, the Lincoln Project would be dead. Okay, guys, we'll be right back, and then we'll get back into more. Okay, next up, let's head back to the Gaza Strip, Brad. Times.
I don't mean to make light of the Hamas attack on Israel back on October 7th, but I feel like that this is too apt a comparison. I feel like when people said that that attack was Israel's 9/11, they weren't intending to in this respect. But how about some very strange corollaries? Because it might appear that Israeli intelligence, according to the New York Times, was actually in possession of the Hamas battle plan for the October 7th attack more than a year before the attack actually happened. And in fact, apparently, or reportedly, a Israeli intelligence official witnessed a rehearsal of the attack. And they did not do any acting or took it seriously, apparently.
Yeah. Like, the most apt sort of one-to-one of, like, this is their 9/11 was the unbelievably ridiculous response attacking the people who did not, in fact, attack them. Mm-hmm. That would be the ultimate one. And I don't mean Hamas. I mean the innocent civilians living in the Gaza Strip who are suffering by the thousands. So, yeah, look, this is a really interesting story as far as having information, and I don't know if it's arrogance or what, right? I don't want to mm-hmm. I don't want to lean into conspiracy theory nonsense because I think it's a very easy one to be like, well, they let it happen because they want it. Like that's a easy
I don't even know if that's nonsense. If that's a conspiratorial view. I think that's just an extremely cynical view.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Right. But but I think that would lend to that sort of like they wanted it to do it so they could kill a bunch of people. I think that like lends to like a bit of like anti-Semitism, to be honest. Like mm-hmm. that's what the sneaky Jews would do. Right. Like, and I don't think that's what you think either. Mm-hmm. But that's why I don't want to lean into that. Cause I think sort of the conspiracy theory nonsense is for the intellectually lazy. Right. Mm-hmm. I think actually what is more likely is their arrogance is what, mm-hmm. cause this, right? What could Hamas do to us? I mean, look at all this stuff we have. They're just throwing rocks kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It turns out no, well, we're fucking
my right. Well, and my concern too is that this report, if it's accurate, because Israel won't comment on it right now, but if it's accurate, there's no reason to suggest that it wouldn't be, will even more harden Benjamin Netanyahu from leaving or from stopping the war. Because if this is true, then that war is all that's keeping him in power right now. Because if him especially, who his whole thing is like, yeah, you may not like me and I'm a piece of shit, but I can keep you safe from the Palestinians. That's his whole fucking bag. If it's found out that under his watch, you knew this was going to happen, and you didn't do anything to stop it, you're done. Like, you're done. So like, he's going to dig his heels in even more to try to make sure that he does not, that nothing happens to him. So.
Yeah, look, it's, the entire thing, like, from a narrative perspective is, like, or the narratives that have been presented to us are lopsided nonsense. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. One of the big problems that I personally have with all of this is that we have people taking hardline support of two right-wing governments
mm-hmm.
that are using people in the middle and using that support as a means of stoking incredible violence against both people, right? You could say, and this is the thing that drives me crazy, like on like social media and stuff like that. Yes, the Palestinians are being treated like garbage, 100%. It is 1,000 times worse what is happening right now than what is happening to Jews, right, Israelis right now. Don't dismiss what's happened to Israelis historically, you know, there. Like, you can't just be like, it's not that big of a deal. Don't do that, because that is doing the very lazy work of understanding what the human toll is, right? Because there is human toll on both sides. If you're going to be intelligent about this and you're going to talk about it intelligently, you need to understand that there is human toll on both sides, right? We don't need to count numbers, because this is not the oppression Olympics. Like, a kid getting killed, an Israeli kid getting killed, is just as horrifying as a Palestinian kid getting killed, right? Unless you're what's his face that was debating a couple of weeks ago, right? Alan Dershowitz, mm-hmm. right? Well, is it that bad, right? Like, you know, that kind of shit. But in the minds of normal brained individuals, they're equally terrible, right? So you should have sympathy for Israelis that have been unjustifiably killed in this shit, as with Palestinians. The problem is, people like to pretend that the other side or whatever argument are not as bad, right? They justify it in weird ways. But fundamentally, I don't like the idea of supporting either one of these far right wing governments. You could say the Israeli government is less right wing than Hamas, which is a far, far extremist group. Sure. But 6 on one hand, half a dozen on the other. At the end of the day, people are getting shot based on their policies that are just pushing citizens up against each other and saying, these people are trying to kill you. And meanwhile, they're shooting guns above their head at the other guy, right? So it is a recipe for disaster, right? That being said, this interview that Mark Lamont does with a former Israeli, U.S. Israeli ambassador is fucking insane, right? This is a prime example of, you know, people are saying, oh, well, TikTok is the reason why young people aren't supporting Israel and they're being convinced of all this stuff. No, dude, it's what you're saying that young people are like, hey, man, I'm not an idiot. I can hear the words coming out of your mouth. You don't need to be tricked by TikTok influencers. You can just listen to the former Israeli ambassador and his logic. Like, this is why shit is primarily fucked for Israel right now from just a PR perspective alone. So here is this interview. It's 3.5 minutes, but we're going to, like, jump in, right? We'll pause and jump in. So it's just wild. Just really pay attention to the rhetoric that comes out here.
Cannot allow you to say 15 things that are unfactual and not be challenged on them. I'm happy to let you talk, but I'm going to ask clarifying questions.
You're going to tell me what's factual?
I spent
5 years of my life studying this, living it. When was the last time you were in Gaza, Mark? When was the last time you were in Gaza?
18 months ago.
He was not expecting a response.
When was the last time you were in Gaza?
A few years ago.
Okay, so you said Al-Shifa Hospital has been a proven Hamas headquarters. What independent reference, what source, what investigation has proven that? Who has proven that it's an Al-Shifa Hospital since it's been a proven fact? Who proved it?
So now we're going to get into this basic, like, Holocaust denying idea that evidence that Israel has shown is
like,
not
pause,
valid.
Pause the video real quick.
Everybody that challenges you is
pause,
not.
Pause it real quick.
What?
That's insane. Like, again, like, to your point, like, when you go from, hey, can you talk about independent sourcing that is verified that Hamas is using this hospital as a base? And you jump from your retort to that question is jumping from that question to Holocaust denial.
Like, dude, come on, man.
I dare say that your argument's not very strong if you have to back into that.
Like, dude, again, this is why you have made it impossible to have an actual legitimate conversation about the right-wing government of Israel. Not of Israeli citizens, not of Jewish folks. Right-wing Israeli government's moves here. And it's just like, oh, that's Holocaust denial. Me criticizing Netanyahu has fuck all to do with the atrocities of the Holocaust. That's
right.
Insane.
It's not even anti-Semitism. Like again, if you're saying, hey, I don't trust the information that's coming from this government, I'm not an anti-Semite just because I think the Israeli government is lying to justify their own
needs. They've
been
caught lying before, right? In this exact fucking situation. So it's just wild to me. It's wild to me that he goes there immediately. Immediately, that's his first response. I'm like, one. By the way, I just thought about this. He says that it's some type of Holocaust, like a type of like Holocaust-like denial to ask, hey, where did you verify this information? By that same logic, let's take his logic and throw it back in his face. By that same logic, you trying to call out a journalist, a black journalist, about when's the last time you were in Gaza, is that you? Are you implying that he doesn't know because he's an African American? Like that he doesn't have the wherewithal to have this information and be present in the topic that he's talking about? Right? No. Someone saying that would be like, dude, that's a bridge a bit too far. Yeah, it's just
well,
like
and again, like that
bridge too far. It's ridiculous.
That whole statement, like the tone with which Friedman asked Mark Levon Hill, like, when was the last time you were in Gaza? Like, it's obvious, like, it's obvious that he thinks, he's like, oh, you don't fucking know what you're talking about. Like, you probably never even fucking been there. Like, he was shocked when Mark Levon Hill was like, yeah, I was there a year and a half ago. Like, what now? What do you want to talk about next?
Huh? What? And it was funny because he was like, when was the last time you were there? And did you notice? He started, like, obfuscating. He started moving off the topic. He's like, no. I'm going to ask you again. What was the last time? Oh, fuck. A few years ago. Yeah, so how the fuck do you know? You don't know any more or less in this present moment than he does, right? But his job as a journalist is to ask questions. You're supposed to be an expert. He's asking questions, and immediately you're like, oh, this is like Holocaust denial. Come on, man. That is a completely unserious response.
Yeah.
It's completely unserious response. So let us continue into the mouth of madness.
Everybody that challenges you is not doing Holocaust denial. You said that it's a Hamas headquarter. I simply asked you for evidence of it. I said who? And you immediately equated it to Holocaust denial.
Israel has presented evidence. Ask the CIA.
Oh boy. That's a wild move. Ask the CIA? Are you sure? Like, for what? You think the CIA can't be trusted with, like, look, the CIA knows information. Sure. The CIA disseminates information as they need to, right? They acquire information as they need to. But what the CIA says publicly, that's not necessarily a trustworthy source. And any legitimate person would know, I'm not going to say CIA. That's going to sound crazy.
Well, and they're certainly not, like even if they did have this information, they're certainly not going to disclose it during the actual conflict. Like that's
no,
not
get it 20 years later in a fucking briefing, right? Like, yeah, it turns out we fucking knew that. Like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. But that's a wild thing. Well, just ask the CIA. They've had decades of trustworthy behaviors, absolutely, especially in foreign countries. Like, okay.
Buddy,
ask the CIA,
this?
Sir. Yeah.
You don't trust the government. You don't trust the American government. You don't trust the Israeli government. Who should we trust? Hamas? You want to trust Hamas? Go ahead, trust Hamas.
Okay.
The people.
Terrible argument. Terrible argument. Terrible argument. Terrible argument. Hey, you don't trust the American government. One, on this? Not exactly. two, you don't trust the Israeli government. No, they're in direct conflict with the situation. You shouldn't just trust them independently. That's like trusting America during our response to 9/11 or the war on... like the war in Iraq or, you know, in Afghanistan. You go to other countries. You do independent reporting because those people aren't mired in the biases that exist in the conflict. So, no, I don't trust the Israeli government. It's not because the Israeli government is inherently evil. It's because they're on the front lines of the shit. You have to ask someone else, someone without a charged perspective. That's an idiotic argument. Then... like a fucking child. Well, you just trust Hamas? Yeah, Hamas is the only other person to talk to here.
Well, no, and this is what happens when...
No, I don't trust Hamas either, by the way. What the fuck?
Well, but this is what happens when you're trying to debate substantive questions with rhetoric, because that's all David Friedman has in this situation. All he has is rhetoric. Yeah. Again, like this is Holocaust denial. Ask the CIA. You don't trust the American government. It's rhetoric based argument. They're not rooted in fact.
Yeah, I just thought that was funny. Who are you going to trust? Hamas? No. What? I don't know, man. Talk to someone else. There's other journalists from other parts of the world that are around. Right. Prime example. We found these 40 babies who've had their heads cut off and been dismembered and all this other shit. Hamas did it. They killed all these Jewish babies. You know, no one has verified that. No other journalist outside of the Israeli military, no other journalists have been able to justify that. It's like, this is a story that happened. We have been able to independently verify that. None. Not in any country. Not in the U.S. Nowhere. Nowhere. The only people who pushed that shit were hardcore right-wing governments or right-wing organizations like Fox News and shit. But no one else has been able to verify that. None. So when you tell me I should trust the Israeli military in their assessments of a situation they are deeply connected to and have absolute bias in, I would say no. Here's another proof of that. Like, again, that is a childish response to be like, you just trust Hamas now? Like, come on, man. You're better than this. Or maybe you're not. I don't know.
David, here's the point.
Under Article 8 of the Rome Statute and under Article 33 of the 1949 Geneva Convention, international law forbids the targeting of civilians. Do you disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that at all.
Okay. Would you agree that targeting a refugee camp that has children in it and adults who are non-Hamas members, who are not actors in the military, would constitute targeting a civilian?
I completely disagree with that. Completely disagree.
I'm sorry. Am I tasting pennies? What the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? It's a refugee camp they bombed. They bombed a refugee camp, dude.
And Mark Lamont Hill doesn't say this, but like, it's the point that I feel you need to be thrown in their face. Because, and fair or not. This may be fair, may not be fair. But because Israel is like the party with like resources in this scenario, because they're the party that has the upper hand, because like not just in this conflict period, but just generally the whole relationship between them and the Palestinians and Israel, they have more responsibility to act in a humanitarian
manner.
They just do because they have the means, they have the intelligence, they have the resources, and they have the obligation to do that.
Yeah, you're the biggest kid on the block at that point.
If you're gonna sit there and you're gonna call Hamas savages and you're gonna call Hamas barbarians, lowering yourself to that level and indiscriminately targeting areas with civilians in them because you think you might catch a couple of, you know, Hamas soldiers in the blast as well, even though, you know, if we kill 100 civilians and as long as we got like 10 Hamas guys, like that's a good ratio. Like, no, you don't get to do that. You don't. And again, we had the same criticism of the U.S. in their campaign over the last fucking 20 years in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Incidentally, so did the rest of the world.
Right.
Not just a bunch of fucking douchebag liberals on a podcast here, but the rest of the world had that argument. Hey, man, you can't just indiscriminately bomb the shit out of Iraq and kill Iraqi citizens. You have to be more strategic. You're the big boys on the block. You have the weaponry. Yeah. You have the intelligence. You have the soldiers. You have the time to do that. If you're like you said, if you're going to call them savages and everything else, lowering yourself to that level does not make you look good.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. And like, I don't know why this is so hard to fucking understand, but you don't get to just bomb them until they love you type of shit. It doesn't work.
That's counterproductive to your to your aims. Unless your aim is just to eradicate all Palestinian citizens.
Well, some people, the way a lot of people talk, that is their aim.
Right.
Right? Like, push them into the fucking sea. And it's just like, dude, no. And again, you are going to lose the world. You're losing the world's sympathy for you. You're losing it. Look, when 9/11 happened, the world was largely sympathetic to what happened to America. This is fucking unbelievable, even though, like, from a foreign policy standpoint, we probably definitely had it coming because of all the horrendous shit we've done over decades and decades and decades, right? But the world was in largely in sync to go, hey, man, this is fucked up. They were,
yeah,
you bombed a bunch of, you ran planes into an innocent bunch of people. You did not attack a military base. You attacked a bunch of civilians. Totally.
And innocent. And by the way, England, France, Germany, Australia, like all those guys, they're like, fucking mount up. Let's go. Like they were on board with the fucking fucking game plan from the get go.
Right. But as time went on, and especially when we got to Iraq and everything else, as time went on, the notion was, hey, man, you cannot just kill people indiscriminately. This mm-hmm. is not okay. And that is one of the big charges against the Bush administration, is that they just did not give a fuck. We killed or displaced a million people in Iraq. How we are not learning the exact same lesson in much shorter time is unbelievable to me, right? What is interesting, and what I will give young people a lot of credit for, is they are learning it. Mm-hmm. They are not jumping aboard this shit like a lot of us did back after 9/11.
Well, right? and I think they're benefited by not remembering 9/11. Like, again, like, I understand why 9/11
not happening to us directly too.
Right. Because and I understand why the response to 9/11 happened, because I was fucking there. Like, I remember experiencing it, and like, we were all like, yeah, fucking let's go, fuck those guys, like, we're gonna kick their ass, like, this bullshit, blah, blah, blah. I get it. And so when you grow up not having that emotional remembrance of that incident, it's a lot easier to just to look at it from a more level-headed point of view and be like, you know, it was pretty fucked up with what happened, but like, the response was like, pretend like more fucked up. like you guys killed fucking thousands of people, like, what the hell?
So it's tens of thousands, right? Or in our case, some estimates, a million. Right. Like, it's just absolutely insane. Let's just continue, because it ain't fucking over yet.
If Israel is targeting Hamas in a refugee camp and it's pinpointing its attacks on Hamas, and there is collateral damage, there's collateral damage. That's war. That's called war. W-A-R. That's what it is.
So here's the challenge, David. Israel argues that Hamas is everywhere in Gaza, that they're under every hospital, that they're in every university, that they're in every refugee camp. You agree with that, right? We can agree to that.
No, Israel does not think they're everywhere. Israel thinks that they are where they are. And there are, those are in many, but not all, civilian locations.
So the challenge is, by that logic, virtually every civilian location is vulnerable and viewed as a legitimate target. And so what happens is, thousands of innocent people die. Again, when you bomb a refugee camp, there's no reason to believe that it's the only way to get at a Hamas target. When a hospital is bombed, there's no reason to believe that's the only way to do this. And if you know that the quote-unquote collateral damage, as you call it, is thousands of civilians, then yes, it seems like an improper thing. But again, it's not just me saying this. The UN, the International Red Cross, all of these bodies, including outside of the UN, who you said you don't respect, they also agree that these are war crimes. So why does the entire international community believe that these are war crimes and not you?
So, because I think I have an unbiased view, and I think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in the world. Okay? There's a lot of anti-Israel behavior in the world. But let me ask you a question, Mark.
Because anti-Semitism exists. That's why all these people are wrong. The pièce de résistance of that entire clip is Friedman at the end. Like, I they're wrong because my view is unbiased. Like, what? Pardonnez-moi?
I think I have an unbiased view. Well, it's cute that you think so. You don't. You don't at all. Like, you don't at all. Just unreal, man. That's just an unreal.
But and again, we've seen it time and time again. And we've seen it a lot more for Israel hardliners than Hamas hardliners. But this works for them as well. It is so easy to walk people into saying the most ridiculous things because again, like they're so entrenched on one side or the other, and that's the problem, is that you don't, like you said, you don't see the humanity, you don't see you don't see the people on the other side of the conflict. All you see is enemy combatants. And to Freeman's point, like he was very unequivocal about saying it. Like, look, that's war. It's collateral damage, baby. Like, what are you gonna do? It is what it is. Sorry.
They're people, yo.
But my question is, so if Hamas were to airstrike an Israeli military target, and in that airstrike, there was some bleed off onto a civilian area, and dozens of Israeli citizens died as a result. You can be okay with that too. Or, like you said, it's just collateral damage.
That should have been his next question. That should have been his follow-up question. And like, if there are two mil, because at this point, Hamas is considered a government entity, right? So you are fighting one government entity versus another, right? This is different than a terrorist organization. I will grant you that, yes, Hamas is a terrorist organization, but I'm just saying they are in charge of the government, right? So, quote unquote, on its face, they appear to be at equal levels as the Israeli government, right? You're right. If Hamas did an airstrike, if they had that capability, they do not. They did an airstrike. You don't even have to say a military target. What if they just said, well, we're... Yeah, look, they're both, you know, Hamas is running the government for the Palestinians, and obviously the Israeli government exists. You don't even have to say, like, what if Hamas did an airstrike on a military base? What if Hamas just said, you know what, our intel, believe us, obviously, because we're telling you, our intel says that Israel has, you know, part of the Iron Dome is hit under this hospital or whatever the control center for the Iron Dome is or whatever. So you just make up any bullshit you want. You just do whatever you want. And they just did a fucking airstrike and killed 5,000 Israeli citizens. Would Freeman think it's cool? Right? By his logic? No, surely, right? It's just war. W-A-R. And let me spell it for you dumb idiots on television. Right? No, of course not. Would anyone think that's acceptable? No, of course not. Why do you think it is okay? Because at the end of the day, all of these guys who make these arguments, like Friedman is making, it comes down to one thing. And I know people don't want to talk about it because it's hard to say and you want to fucking give a lot of high-minded academic bullshit to it. But here's what it is. They believe one Israeli life is more important and is worth more than one Palestinian life. That's all it is. That's it. That's it. Is that all Jews? No, of course not. Is it these assholes who believe this? 100%. They just think fundamentally these people are worth more. That's why you can have weird conversations about, oh, well, you know, one person died, but that somehow justifies 1,000 people dying. You can't possibly believe that if you believe that one human life is worth another human life, that they are of equal standing. You can't. You simply can't, because you can look at the raw numbers and go, wow, how many people died? 1,000 people died on October 7th? That's really fucked up. How many people have died? Palestinians have died? 12,000? That's insane, should be the response. Not, No. Like the opening credits of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Palestine existed before. It did. You can look it up. It's a wild Indiana Jones being anti-Semitic, saying that, in fact, the Palestinians were there first. They were. Like, it's just a fact, dude. They were. Sorry. Now, you could say, oh, there was an accord, blah, 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 pre-1963. Yeah, you know, that's fine. We can all have that conversation. I would like it to be a two-state solution. But what you cannot pretend is that those people they weren't there first. They were.
Right.
They physically were there first. So it's to me, this idea of all this high-minded talk only escapes the one reality. People like Friedman, people like Dershowitz, and other people who espouse the shit that they espouse, they say it because they do not think one Palestinian kid is worth the same as one Israeli kid. And that's the fucked up fundamentals of it. And it's a sad state that human beings would even open their mouths to go on television and say shit like that. It's disgusting. It's just disgusting. Because if it was your kid is worth just as much as anybody else. Your safety of your child is worth just as much as the safety of any other child. And the fact that you don't think so, I'm sorry, it makes it really hard for me to go, oh, I should feel really like sympathetic to your arguments. I don't feel sympathetic to your arguments because you're not even sympathetic to a human argument. To a human argument. Not that I'm not sympathetic to Israelis dying. Of course I am. They're human beings. They're innocent human beings. But you, just as much as you are concerned about that, how the fuck are you not concerned about 12,000 plus people being killed who had nothing to do with this shit? They're just standing in the middle, dude. Why don't you leave? Where do you want me to go? Go to that refugee camp. Cool. We'll bomb it. What the fuck, man? What the fuck? You're losing the PR war because you're doing dirty shit.
Yeah.
That's it. You're not losing it because people hate you just because of your religion. You're losing it because they can watch television and see you do it. Yeah, but 40 years ago, this happened. Yeah, that was horrible too. Stop doing this now.
Jay, what say we lighten the mood with some blatant racism?
Okay. That's the way we like it. A little bit of blatant political racism. Look, before we get to the good old fashioned racism, because there's the Trump co-defendant one that she just walks herself right into some stupidity. One of Trump's co-defendants in Georgia, she decided to go on Instagram Live or something.
And was
"Hey, I'm gonna fuck up this person who is gonna talk shit on me," and they were like, "All right, cool." That's witness intimidation, so we're going to go ahead and pursue charging you yet again, you dumb asshole. This is
the
Trivian Cootie, the former publicist for Kanye West. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is the person who decided like it would be a good look to smile diabolically in her Fulton County mugshot.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. You look nuts. But I mean, this is the lady who was the head publicist. She was a publicist for Kanye West. I mean,
yes, and she was the one that tried to accost Ruby Friedman into admitting that she helped rig the election and count extra votes, which she did not. Of course,
she did not. By the way, spoiler alert: you're going to go to jail. You're going to go to jail, right? Like, you're aware of that. You're going to go to jail, and here's how I know. You're black, and they have no problem in throwing your black ass in jail for doing dirty shit. Do you think you're gonna get saved like the rest of these white Republicans? Okay, you're not. You're gonna go to jail, and you deserve it because you're too stupid to learn a basic lesson. You're not the same as them. You can't do the same shit. Donald Trump can intimidate witnesses. He can say anything he wants. You're not Donald Trump. You're the former publicist for Kanye West. That's all you have to your name. You go into jail. And you know what? You deserve it. I love it. That's a prime This Weekend Stupid fucking story. You deserve every bit of it, idiot. Last one before we get out of here. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Welcome back to the show. Just play it, right? Just play the clip. I mean, what else are we going to do? This is just too good. This is Marjorie Taylor Greene just like, on TikTok, like this is like a TikTok live, like just or
some kind of a live stream, but just listen and just again listen when she catches herself. It's great.
I gotta tell you, anybody's unemployment has to do with bad choices and personal responsibility, and again, that does not have a skin color. I know a ton of white people that are as lazy and sorry. And probably worse than black people I know.
What do you mean by that? You can't get over on me.
That I just Drizzly or whatever his name is at the end there. But like that's just fucking hilarious. Like I know white people that are just as lazy as black people. I'm sorry, what? Are white people okay? Like, are you guys all right?
White people are fine. Obviously, Marge is not.
I mean, I'm not sure white people are fine either, in fairness to you guys. Yeah. But that's just a wild thing.
Well,
that's
true, yes. Yeah, like yes, a white people is not fine right now. But I'm doing great.
Yeah, so. You're doing fine, right.
Yeah.
I just thought that was hilarious. Like, just as lazy, if not lazier, than a black person. Can you imagine a white person being that lazy? Like,
well, and that's the thing. Like, she realized what she was saying as she was saying it, and then tried to pivot it and tried to spin it into, like, something that didn't sound incredibly racist, and still kind of failed at that. Because, like, even though she's saying, like, you know, black people I know, but, like, you're still basically, like, going with the assumption that, quote-unquote, you think black people are lazy. Yeah. And, like that old chestnut, that old stereotype.
Yeah. So, I mean, she might as well have come out and been like, you know, lazy as black people. Or, like a Mexican. I don't know, guys.
I feel like she might have had more success if she pivoted to the Hispanic stereotype. Yeah.
Which, again, makes no sense. Have you seen how hard those people work? Like, it's
counter. They're stealing all the jobs. But they're lazy as fuck, not doing anything.
Mooching
off the government team.
Right. They're stealing all the jobs and then just laying them out. Like, yep, that's why people keep hiring them for cheap, lazy labor. That makes sense. Yeah, it's just,
you know what? It's refreshing to see the mask fall off occasionally. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just to lay it bare for everybody, just to remind everyone who she is at the end of the day.
In case you fucking forgot, we didn't. All right, that is it for us. We will see you guys not next week. I'm actually out of town. So I'll be back in Baltimore.
Ironically, Jay will be in town, and because Jay is in the country, in the same city in which I reside, we will not be able to do a podcast.
We will not be recording. Like, get out of here. No way. No episode next week, but we will be back the following week. All right. Later, guys.
See ya.
Bye.